Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Why was this verse not put on the board? We're reading from verse 5, right? What's that? 6. So, something about, actually, one of the rare times I actually looked at the verse. O King, longevity, sensory prowess, physical and mental strength, intelligence and bravery are naturally and equally manifested in all the inhabitants of the five islands headed by Plakshadweep. Text 7. Plakshadweep is surrounded by an ocean of sugarcane juice, equal in breadth to the island itself. Similarly, there is another island, Shalmalitadweep, which is twice as broad as Plakshadweep. 400,000 yojanas, or 3,200,000 miles, and surrounded by an equally broad body of water called Sarasagara, an ocean that tastes like liquor. On Shalmalitadweep, there is a Shalmali tree from which the island takes its name. That island is as broad and tall as the Plaksha tree. In other words, 100 yojanas, 800 miles broad, and 1,100 yojanas, 8,800 miles tall. Learned scholars say that this gigantic tree is the residence of Garuda, the king of all birds in carry of Lord Vishnu. In that tree, Garuda offers Lord Vishnu his Vedic prayers. The son of Maharaj Priyavrata named Yajnabahu, the master of Shalmalidvipa, divided the island into 7 tracts of land, which he gave to his 7 sons. The names of those divisions, which correspond to the names of the sons, are Sarochana, Salmanasya, Ramanaka, Deva Varsha, Paribhadra, Apyaya, and Abhigyata. In those tracts of land there are 7 mountains, Swarasa, Shatashringa, Vamanadev, Kunda, Mukunda, Pushpa Varsha, and Sahasrashruti. There are also 7 rivers named Anumati, Sanivali, Sarasvati, Kuhu, Rajani, Nanda, and Raka. They are still existing. Strictly following the cult of Anashram Dharma, the inhabitants of those islands were known as Shutidharas, Viryadharas, Vasundharas, and Ishandharas, all worship the expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, named Sama, the moon god. The inhabitants of Shalmalidvipa worship the demigod of the moon in the following words. By his own rays, the moon god has divided the month into 2 fortnights, known as Shukla and Krishna, for the distribution of food grains to the pittas and the demigods. The demigod of the moon is he who divides time, and he is the king of all the residents of the universe. We therefore pray that he may remain our king and guide, and we offer him our respectful obeisances. Outside the ocean of liquor is another island known as Kushadweepa, which is 800,000 yojanas, 6,400,000 miles wide. Twice as wide as the ocean of liquor, as Shalmalidvipa is surrounded by a liquor ocean, Kushadweepa is surrounded by an ocean of liquid ghee, as broad as the island itself. On Kushadweepa, there are clumps of kusha grass, from which the island takes its name. This kusha grass, which is created by the demigods by the will of the Supreme Lord, appears like a second form of fire, but with very mild and pleasing flames. Its young shoots illuminate all directions. Purport. From the description in this verse, we can make an educated guess about the nature of the flames on the moon. Like the sun, the moon must be full of flames, because without flames, there cannot be illumination. The flames on the moon, however, unlike those on the sun, must be mild and pleasing. This is our conviction. The modern theory that the moon is full of dust is not accepted in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. In regard to this verse, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Su-shas-pani sukomala shikhas tesham rochisha. The kusha grass illuminates all the directions, but its flames are very mild and pleasing. This gives some idea of the flames existing on the moon. Could give some class on how we never went to the moon, but we're not going to do that. O king, another son of Maharaj Priyavrata, Hiranyareta, was the king of this island. He divided into seven parts, which he delivered to his seven sons according to the rites of inheritance. The king then retired from family life to engage in austerities. The names of those sons are Vasu, Vasudhana, Dhritaruchi, Stutyavrata, Navigupta, Vivikta, and Vamanadev. In those seven islands, there are seven boundary mountains known as Chakra, Chatushringa, Kapila, Chitrakuta, Devanika, Urvaroma, and Dravina. There are also seven rivers known as Ramakulya, Madhukulya, Mitravinda, Shutavindra, Devagarbha, Grichachuta, and Mantramala. The inhabitants of the island of Kushadweep are celebrated as the Kushalas, Kovidas, Abhiyuktas, and Kulakas. They are like the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas and Shudras, respectively. By bathing in the rivers, waters of those rivers, they all become purified. They are expert in performing ritualistic ceremonies according to the orders of Vedic scriptures. Thus they worship the Lord in his aspect as the demigod of fire. This is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Kushadweepa worship the fire god. O fire god, you are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, and you carry to him all the offerings of all sacrifices. Therefore, request you to offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead the jagat ingredients we are offering the demigods. The Lord is the real enjoyer. Purport. The demigods are servants who assist the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when it worships the demigods, as servants of the Supreme, carry the sacrificial offerings to the Lord. Like tax collectors collecting revenue from the citizens and bringing it to the government's treasury. The demigods cannot accept the sacrificial offerings. They simply carry the offerings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Yasya Prasada Bhagavad Prasada. Since the Guru is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he carries to the Lord whatever is offered to him. Similarly, all the demigods as faithful servants of the Supreme Lord hand over to the Supreme Lord whatever is offered to them in sacrificial performances. There is no fault in worshiping the demigods with this understanding, but to think that the demigods are independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and equal to him is called ritagyana, a loss of intelligence. Kamaishtaisritagyana. One who thinks that the demigods themselves are the actual benefactors is mistaken. Mong Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutta Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swainta Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskyadhyade Satarane. two ideas. One idea is that why is it we're reading the fifth canto about things that seem so extraordinary? Trees that are 8,800 miles high. Try to imagine a tree 1 mile high. And then try to imagine, quite difficult, the airplanes, they fly in the sky at 32,000 feet, and that's around 6 miles high in comparison. Now think of a tree which is 10 miles high or 100 miles high. Now let's go to 1,000, poking its head into the moon. What to speak of 8,000 miles high? And what to speak of 8,800 miles high? Just add an extra 800 miles. So this is quite inconceivable. Why did Shukadeva Goswami, what was he trying to do? Confuse everyone? Put everyone into doubt that this is a fairy tale? It's hard enough. Well, on one side, we come to the 10th canto eventually, and we find out that God, who's controlling all these things and creating them all, he's a cowherd boy. So that's enough to bewilder some people. And when Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe, comes to see him, he has in his left hand some fruit salad. He doesn't even know the difference between his right and left hand, and he's God. He doesn't know he's supposed to put the fruit salad in his right hand. Like, he's not even civilized. So why all this description? And it goes on. We'll find trees even bigger, mountains with trees that have mango fruits the size of elephants. Picture an elephant and picture a mango fruit the size of an elephant. Give you a year's supply of mangoes. And these fruits, unlimited number of fruits, they drop from the trees and fall and create a river of mango juice and jackfruit juice and a kind of berry juice. And these juices flow down to the ocean of milk, and on the ocean of milk with combined with the sun, they form gold, and the demigods, they come and take the gold and ornament themselves with the gold. Mango gold. Jackfruit gold. I guess if they're hungry, they eat the gold. So why is this described? Because in one sense, we are living in a very limited conception of existence. And we've been trained to take this conception of existence as the limit to reality. And that anything above our present sphere of existence, we feel very uncomfortable with. We've been trained up like that. Indeed, even things that are obvious and perceivable and experienced, people can't accept if it goes beyond their present conception. That's how powerful conceptions are. Just like in England, there is one mystic. He was able to float in the air. So they gathered at that time all the respectable scientists within Europe, including George Wallace, who was co-founder with the theory of evolution with Darwin. And all these respectable scientists came to the hotel, and this particular mystic walked out the hotel window and was floating in the air. And all the scientists who were witnessing it reported that that's what they witnessed. And all the scientists in America, when they heard this report, didn't believe it. That the most credible scientists in Europe reporting on something, but because it didn't fit into the conception of modern science, therefore couldn't have happened, although everyone was observing it. And science is supposed to be observation. So our preconceptions are so powerful that even something's before us, we won't believe it. That our vision is limited by our conceptions. And nowadays we don't hear reports like that, how some mystic walked out the hotel window and the respectful scientists in Europe observed it, because it was rejected and therefore it didn't exist. It didn't happen. Many times we hear stories of devotees or other people. They have some terminal disease. The scientists have x-rayed them, ran all the tests, and said you only have a few minutes, days, or a few weeks left to live. And somehow or another the person gets cured, comes back, the scientists retest him, the doctors retest him, he doesn't have the disease, and they say, well, we must have mixed up your x-rays or something, because it's not possible you could have been cured. You're actually dead, but you just appear to be alive. Or you're trying to, you know, you're anti-scientist, that's why you're alive, you're trying to make fun of us. So strong is people's conception of existence. And what to speak when you hear the fifth canto. We've heard, I don't know of anyone who's left the movement because of reading the fifth canto. Oh, this is all a fairy tale. Next, there'll be fairies in the Bhagavatam. And actually, there are fairies. The apsaras look like fairies. They have wings on their back, and they're fairies. And maybe there is bad fairies and good fairies. Yeah, everything is there in the Bhagavatam. And people will take this as all a fairy tale. And some people, they'll take it as so far out, although they don't believe it, they like it. It's entertaining. They'll buy the fifth canto and read it to their children, just like someone buys a fairy tale book and reads it to their children. But what do we have to do with this? Actually, we have nothing to do with this, practically speaking. It's the fifth canto for the devotees is actually not very important in the sense, whether we believe it or not, it's not very important. It's not that we have to pray to Krishna, oh Krishna, I don't believe this, this sounds too extraordinary to me. What am I going to do? I'm full of doubts. When I read this fifth canto, it seems like a fairy tale. But actually, it doesn't really matter whether it's a fairy tale or not. It has nothing to do with our practical devotional service. What's important is that we believe that there is a Krishna, and we understand that we're quite limited in our conceptions of things. What to speak of our experience? Our conception is limited. And therefore, whether there is an ocean of liquor, whether there is an ocean of ghee, an ocean of milk, it makes no difference to our present experience, our present practical devotional service, because even if there was an ocean of ghee, we're not about to get a donation for the deities from the ocean. Some demigod arrives with a container of ghee from the ocean of milk, from the ocean of ghee, and we think, thank you very much, you know. Can we order a couple more? We're not about to get an ocean of, a container from the ocean of ghee, and we're not going to be able to bottle liquor from the ocean of liquor. Sell it for the, you know, make some money for the deities. It's not going to happen. So, nor are we going to even get one mango. Just one mango from the mango tree, and I'll believe. Even if we got a mango from the mango tree, then we simply believe that there was a tree with a big mango. Or it wouldn't bring us any closer to devotional service. Therefore, although our experience is not probably in this lifetime, sometimes they'd ask Prabhupada about what does Indra look like, or Lord Brahma looks like. And Prabhupada's response would sound like, what does it matter? You know, if you know Krishna, what does it matter if you know Indra and Brahma? So we have a chance to meet Krishna. We may not meet a mango from the mango tree. We may not get any bottled liquor from the ocean of liquor. But we can meet Krishna, who's the source of all this, just by chanting Hare Krishna. We can bypass all these sub-wonderful experiences, marvelous things that are going on in the universe, and meet the source of all marvelous things, namely Krishna, just by chanting Hare Krishna. So that's the only thing we really have to believe, that by executing devotional service and therefore developing an attitude of surrender and submission to the Supreme Person, beginning with awe and reverence, then we can become qualified to meet the most awesome person, the most awesome thing, namely Krishna. And that, because we can get direct perception, pratyakshamam vargamam, we'll believe, we'll actually become a believer. I believe. We'll see the light. I've seen. We can actually experience directly. Therefore, we shouldn't worry so much whether there's an ocean of liquor or milk. We can accept or we can reject. It makes no difference. There's no reason to blindly accept. Except by the authority of the scriptures, we accept that's what the scriptures say. Certainly we don't blindly reject that it's impossible. Otherwise, how is it possible that the sun's rising at a appointed time and setting at a appointed time? According to the scientist's vision, that would be impossible. If everything went on by automatically, it would be impossible. So their vision is impossible. Our vision is practical. Because we can see that's what's going on in the universe. That there is order, there is fantastic things that we're perceiving already. There may be some other fantastic things we don't perceive, but we don't worry about them because we're very limited. And we're always going to be limited. It's not that one time, one day will come and that we'll be able to see the entire material and spiritual universes. Of course, Mother Jasoda, when she asked Krishna to open his mouth to see if he'd eaten dirt, that she had noticed that in Krishna's mouth was all of time and space and all the elements and all the demigods, past, present, future, and all the universes. So what did she feel? Now I become God. Now I am... No, she became bewildered. What's going on? Am I hallucinating? Am I having some kind of dream? Or what's going on? Maybe my son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I'm just imagining that I'm the Queen of Vrindavan, and Nanda Maharaj is the King. She became very philosophical, but this was not very good for her devotional service, and therefore Krishna expanded his yoga maya, put her back in the conception that she was simply Krishna's mother, and that Krishna was a little baby, and therefore she became a mother again to Krishna. Therefore, in one sense, we don't have to worry about all this opulence of Krishna, the opulence of creation, but we should recognize, when we read this, how limited our conceptions of life may be. And if we can't even accept, on the basis of authority, these very limited descriptions, then how are we going to accept that there's an unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly famous, unlimitedly renounced, unlimitedly intelligent, and that he's appearing before us in the form of his holy name. But if we can accept these things, then the result is we can see how much we're covered by the illusory energy, and that should make us a little humble, that naham prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samavrita muda yam nabi jananti loka yam ajam avyam. Krishna says, I am never manifested the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my creative energy, yogamaya, and so the deluded world knows me not, whom unborn and inexhaustible. So we may think that the persons who are not following the path of devotional service, Krishna is referring only to them. But he's also referring to us. Otherwise, why don't we, when we chant Hare Krishna, why doesn't our seeker, our hair, stand on end? Why are we not in full ecstasy? Because we're also covered by Krishna's creative potency, yogamaya, and therefore we're also somewhat affected to some degree or another with impersonalism and materialism. But if we follow the path of devotional service, then gradually these things that are impeding us, Prabhupada summarizes them as the material conception of life, which doesn't allow us to become very enthusiastic about the process of devotional service. We think, oh, another day, another 16 rounds. Another day, I got to wake up early, or else I'll be embarrassed. They'll criticize me. I thought you were a devotee, but you're not at Mangalarati. My doubts are increasing about you, Prabhu. Yes, I must go to protect my false prestige. My prestige as a devotee. So many different doubts and struggles go on within our mind. But ultimately, if we do it just because we want to do it, we're happy to do it. We're happy to chant Hare Krishna. We're happy to take prasadam. We're happy to serve the deities. We're happy to do it. And we're unhappy when we're not doing it. So if we develop a positive mentality, then devotional service will become enjoyable. And if we think it's a struggle, and why do we think it's a struggle? Oh, I got to serve God, but I want God to serve me, but somehow or another it doesn't work like that. I wish I would have been born God, but somehow or another it didn't work. Maybe next lifetime I'll be born God. See, here we find the demigods, they have that same mentality. They'd like to be born God, but they're actually not God either. So the second point is that even the demigods, they're born not as God, but as a servant of God. And although we might may like to think and imagine that they're actually God, as many people on this planet may think, that one day I'll serve God, these demigods, and then I'll become a demigod, and I'll become God. Prabhupada, Bhavananda Prabhu was taking Prabhupada up a hill, and they got up the hill, and then Prabhupada threw his hand away from Bhavananda, who was helping him up the hill, and says, "Now we're up the hill, I don't need you anymore, go away." So Bhavananda was shocked, you know, "Go away, what do you mean?" So Prabhupada said, "This is the impersonalist. You know, help me up the hill, help me up the hill. I've got to the hill, now I don't need you anymore. Go away." The Durga worship in Calcutta, where they're singing in the background, if you listen, one of the tapes, they're singing Mary Martin's Hills Are Alive with the Sound of Music. If you like that song, it's on Prabhupada's tape ministry. So they're worshiping Durga for the week, the Durga Pooj. And then at the end of the week, they take Durga after they get all her benedictions. Give me this, give me that, give me this other thing. And then they throw her into the ocean. We don't need you anymore. Thanks for the benedictions. Swaha. So they get rid of the benefactor after they don't need the benefactor. But similarly, the demigods, let us worship the demigods. But do they really love the demigods? No, they want to get something from the demigods so that one day they can become a demigod and therefore take over the business. But even the demigods, they're not happy, they're not satisfied, according to Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, only the demigods who are serving Krishna, they're happy. Only the demigods who recognize that actually we're simply here to please Krishna. Like Yamaraj, for instance, is a pure devotee, and our Brahma now is a pure devotee. So there are demigods who are completely surrendered to Krishna, and there are demigods who think they're God, like Indra sometimes thinks like that. So the demigods have problems, and we have the same problem. And the mouse in our house who's in the hole, trying to lord it over the hole, he also has the same problem. Therefore, let's solve the problem here rather than try to solve the problem in the heavenly planets or somewhere else. That the real problem is we should become happy serving Krishna. We should become enthusiastic to serve Krishna. When we're asked to do something, whether we're asked by someone else to do it or our intelligence tells us it's time to chant 16 rounds, we shouldn't think, well, I got better things to do, but somehow or another I got to do it. This is an interference for my plans for the day, serving Krishna. No, we should take it as at least an austerity and then try to be happy doing it. Accept it and then execute it to please Krishna, to please our spiritual master, And then the result is maybe our minds will become detached from our minds and won't accept this idea that it's too much of an austerity, it's too difficult, there is no Krishna in the holy name, he couldn't appear, it's not possible, because then he'd be God, and that's not fair. So let me go through the austerity of chanting Hare Krishna, and that way I'll be a good devotee, but please, Krishna, don't appear too quickly and spoil my life. No, we have to accept the holy name and try to actually become submissive to the holy name, try to become receptive to the holy name, try to hear the holy name, try to chant nicely the holy name, and therefore gradually are, as Krishna reveals himself, if we realize the Supreme Lord, then everything else will become revealed too, including mountains with, maybe we won't see the mountain, but at least we'll have some faith that it's really there. So, we'll stop there. Any questions? I don't know if it's good that no one asks a question or not. Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada.